You're listening to Civic Media. You can tune into any of our live shows on any radio station across the state with the Civic Media app. Find us in your phone's app store and listen anytime, anywhere.
Welcome. Oh, another week is here. And thank you all for joining us again. This week we have an awesome guest. And like every guest is awesome, but like this one, let me tell you, she is freaking awesome. She should be familiar to like most people in Wisconsin. And if you're not, I don't know what rock you're living under, but we have Pauline Lee, who was, you worked at WLK Fox 11. Doing good day, Wisconsin.
Yes.
CBS 58 in Milwaukee. Mm-hmm. I'm not going to ask you which one was your favorite because we are on in Milwaukee and I don't want to offend anyone
well,
down there.
I also worked in lacrosse. You can't forget
true.
About lacrosse. That's where I started my career.
Yes. So, yeah, what's up? Hi.
Oh my gosh. Hi. Yeah. No, it's been a lot. It's been a long time. I think back very fondly to my time in Wisconsin since I spent most of my career there. It's where I fell in love with the Packers. To this day, by the way, I cheer for both.
I was wondering because you are from Minnesota.
Yes.
You know that
I am. Yeah, no, I still cheer for both. I have a split jersey that I wear each time they play each other, half Vikings, half Packers.
So then like
even gifted my former coworkers at WCCO a sock from each team so that they can wear on game day and be supportive with me.
Oh, that's good. So when they
so
does it matter who wins when they play or is it like
No, because that's the beauty of it.
All
because
right.
They play each other twice a season, so they can each take a win.
Yeah, okay, all right. All right, so you're happy when they split. Okay, that's good. What's because I didn't realize between Green Bay, your time in Green Bay, and then mm-hmm. going to Milwaukee, you went to Fort Wayne. I didn't realize that.
I did. Yeah, that was my first anchoring position.
How was that?
And it was such an experience. And that was also the furthest that I was away from home. I'm originally from, born and raised here in Minnesota. So that was taking me a plane ride away from home. But it was such a great experience. I met so many great people who I still talk to today, told so many great stories that I was fortunate to do so. But it was just a little bit too far away from home. I kind of missed my family and friends. So I moved back a little bit closer. And then my next stop was Milwaukee before coming back here to Minnesota.
You know, it's interesting. Being in like the news industry, I wasn't in the news industry, but I was on the other side of the camera a lot. I was interviewed. And so I got to know a lot of like you people, you know, a lot of reporters and everything. And people don't realize like, my God, that is a nomadic lifestyle it can be. And it's not, it's not easy, you know?
Yeah.
The hours are tough.
No,
like, oh my God.
So at Fox 11, that was my first job as working on the morning show. And mornings means you get up at 2 o'clock in the morning.
Yeah.
Start work at about 3:30 and then you're done at maybe 11 o'clock noonish. And then bedtime is at 7 o'clock, if not sooner than that.
Oh, that
during
is
the week.
So in the summertime, it's like the sun is way up here.
Yes.
And you're dead tired.
Yeah. Yes, I am. And I'm naturally tired at that time too. Blackout curtains, they help. Summertime is hard though, because you do want to be outside. Winter, it's a little bit easier because it gets dark at what, 4 or 5 o'clock now. So
yes, that's true. And for those people who didn't know, when you were in CBS 58, six Emmy nominations, you were on a first place Wisconsin Broadcaster Association. You also produced an hour-long special highlighting rise in Asian American attacks in Wisconsin. Talk about that.
I did. That was, oh my gosh, that project, that came at the height of COVID, at the rise of AAPI hate. And I remember my news director at the time, Kent Harrell, he was so great. He pulled me into his office maybe like a week after the incident at the spa shootings in Atlanta had happened. And he was like, how are you doing? And I was so taken aback because I didn't realize, you know, he would care about how I feel. And so I just took some time and he's like, if you think there's anything that we're missing in our coverage, you let me know if there's something that you want to do. And I thought long and hard about it. And I was like, you know what? I feel like there's enough content here where we can really produce some meaningful work and also showcase the impact, not just to Wisconsin, but also the fact that we have got experts of all races in our communities who can speak to this in an eloquent way and really make a meaningful difference in our community, or at least try to.
What did you uncover? Yeah, what was how? Yeah, talk about that.
It was so interesting because when we're talking about the rise of API hate, we're talking about things that have always happened to people who look like me, but haven't necessarily been front and center of the conversation. We have always been asked, where are you from? No, really, where are you from? And it's always this idea that you are something else. It's the stereotypes that still exist today, no matter how hard people work to break them. And so it's just getting those stories out there and exposing what it's like to be Asian in Wisconsin and really kind of what it's like to be Asian in America.
How was the reception with that?
That was hard. It's hard just because it's a topic that really isn't talked about, right? So when you're trying to start this conversation with people who are like, no, this isn't really a problem, or, you know, we don't really have that big of a population, but we do have a population though, and it is a problem. So we should address it. It's just getting the right people, and it's just getting people to think with an open mind, which is hard. Yeah. It's really hard when, you know, you have so many different kind of things that are happening in the world that can compete for your attention. So was it well received? I would have loved for it to really been able to air on our main channel. At the time, we were only allowed to air it on our sub channel and online on our YouTube channel. Yeah, unfortunately.
That's a bummer.
But I mean, the response that I got from it on social media, through email, people reaching out, that was what made it worth it to me. If I could help change one person, that to me was what made it worth it.
Yeah. Is it still out there? Can we still watch it?
It is. It's still on YouTube. So you can watch it. And then I don't know if you know, so I also did produce a second documentary in my time at WCCO that looked back 50 years after the Vietnam War.
Oh, wow.
And how all of these communities, because when we think of Vietnam War, we just think of the Vietnamese community, which, yes, we were greatly impacted, but there were so many other communities. You talk about the Hmong population. Yeah. We have the biggest concentration of Hmong population here in the Twin Cities and across the country. We also have the Lao community, who was heavily devastated by the Vietnam War. And the Lao community, Hmong community, Thai community, a little bit here and there. And it's just, it's when we don't share those stories, that's when they disappear.
Yeah.
And they're so important to revisit and to remember so that we can look back and learn from history. And then also it just keeps in the mind of, you know, people that the idea of world peace. I mean, we have to learn from what has happened in history. A lofty goal, I know.
Yeah, well, thank God we have such a peaceful guy in the White House that helping us achieve those goals. But so could you send, send me the link to those, because I'd love to link those on the show for people to watch, because I think that would be cool. So I wanted to, and I also want to talk about Project Pride, Project for Pride and Living and what you do, because that's cool. Yeah. And I think I'd love to learn about that. And I think people here, especially because they know and love you, would love to hear what you're up to as well with your new gig. Mm-hmm. But you made a post on Facebook, and I'm finding it right now and I'm going to read it. But knowing who you are, when I saw this post, it like made me stop what I was doing and just, I was like, whoa, because it was not a normal Pauline Lee post. It was very raw, and it was something that, I'll read it. And this is a big deal. And keep in mind, Pauline lives in Minneapolis, where all of this is going on. And this is her post from earlier this week. She said, "Today I caved. I slipped my passport into my purse. I've thought about doing it before, but I always talked myself out of it. Why should I? My family came here legally. I was born here. I am a U.S. citizen. I have every right to exist, move, and breathe in this country without carrying proof of my belonging. But as ICE activity and protests continue in Minnesota, it's becoming painfully clear that none of that seems to matter to some people. So what's worse? That I might get stopped and try to exercise my rights, risking being forcefully detained for hours anyway, or that I quietly give in and admit that, to some, I will always look like a forever foreigner, someone who doesn't truly belong, no matter what my birth certificate or passport says. I don't want to carry it, but today I did. Not because I don't know who I am, but because I'm exhausted by a world that keeps insisting I and those who don't look American are something else. If you are feeling this heaviness too, please take care of yourselves. Take care of each other. Check on your friends, your neighbors, your community. These are tense and uncertain times, and we stay safest when we stay connected. So stay safe and look out for one another, because none of us should have to face this alone. Ooh.
I'm getting teared up as you read that.
Same, man. Same. And I, yeah. Before we get into that, I do want to say with some of the things that I've done, and I'm not comparing that, but I know what it feels like to have to say something and know that what you're going to say is going to shock some people's world, and having to go, okay, breathe and post, right?
Yeah.
Thank you for that courage.
Thanks.
Like, sincerely.
I appreciate it.
Because that's not easy. Talk about that, if you could.
So I posted this almost a week ago, so last Sunday. And the week before that, that was really when the ICE activity here had just really ramped up. And I think it was like earlier in the week. I'm a part of, here in the Twin Cities, we have a lot of community groups that have their own Facebook pages. And so I'm a part of a number of them. And I kept seeing on my feed, ICE activity here, ICE, 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 ICE. And it's all of these places that I go and I frequent and I patron. And so I remember I had to run out and do some errands one night, and I thought, should I put my passport in my purse? And then I thought, I was like, nope, I'm not going to do it. I'm not going to do it. And I didn't. But last Sunday, I was going to a Buddhist temple Sunday morning. And I thought to myself, that question came back up, and I was like, could this potentially be a place where ICE might come? And to me, the answer was yes. So I did it. And sorry.
No, it's it's hard.
When you look at the act itself, right, at face value, you're talking about putting this booklet of pages in your purse. And at face value, it is so simple. And I've gotten so many comments about, oh, that's not a big deal, minor inconvenience, but really, what does that mean? And I remember when I put my passport in my purse, I had so many emotions. I felt sadness, I felt anger, but most of all, I felt so defeated, because to me, it was like a lose-lose situation, that no matter how hard I worked, as being a good U.S. citizen, contributing to my community, the fact that I was born here didn't matter. None of that mattered. To some people, there will always be that question of, do you really belong? Like when I answer, I'm born and raised in Minnesota, that answer is not going to be good enough for some people. And that is so hard to come to terms with, but it's the reality that I've lived my whole life, and for so many others too.
We are we're talking here with Pauline Lee about a post she made and what's going on in Minneapolis. We're going to be right back, and we're going to continue this discussion here on the Rational Revolution right after this.
You're listening to Civic Media. Stay up to date on the latest news and information for your local community and Wisconsin by signing up for our free email newsletter. Visit civicmedia.us/email to get started.
What have we done with this? Welcome back. All right. Welcome back to the Rational Revolution. I'm Mark Becker. We are talking with Pauline Lee, former Emmy-winning broadcaster extraordinaire from, and I'm reclaiming you, were from Wisconsin. Well, she's from Minnesota, but whatever. And you were talking about the post that you made. We read it on the other side of the break. And yeah, I mean, I got choked up reading it the first time. And then speaking those words, I got choked up. And you did as well. You're the professional, Pauline. No, I'm just kidding. But like, when you say and speak it into existence, that's a whole nother thing, isn't it?
It's a whole other thing. And I, just so that you know, I left news late last June. So it hasn't been that long of a time. So in that time, what's happening right now is probably
the world has changed.
it's one of the first big things where I'm not working as a journalist. And normally as a journalist, I would be out there front and center. I would be asking people how they feel. There wouldn't be enough time for me to feel. And then after work, I would just, since I was in the thick of it, I wouldn't want to think about it. I just push those feelings aside. I wouldn't feel. And so now, not necessarily working as a journalist, now it's almost like this realization that I can feel. And then trying to figure out how you feel and trying to put it into words. It took me a really long time to figure out how to do that. And it's just, it's a whole new experience. after like this, after former TV news life that I'm experiencing right now.
So how do you feel? I mean, you said it was, you were defeated and.
Yeah. It's so hard to put into words still. I feel like every day is still so unsettling. It's so unsettling. Like when I go to and from work now, it's just like this heightened feeling that I have to look around every which direction, going to and from my car. It's making sure that I get home and leave work when it's still light out. That, I mean, our office is great in that we're really encouraging each other to walk to our cars together in groups.
I was just going to ask, like, you have that support, right?
Yes. Oh, my gosh. We've had a lot of support at our organization and a lot of changes, too. I mean, I still go to work, and it's almost kind of like this nice kind of distraction, if you will, because of the work that we do, the mission work that we do and helping others in our communities that we serve. It's been a nice distraction to be able to go to work, to be able to be in community with each other. But at the same time too, I've got coworkers, I've got colleagues who, like me, they carry around either their passport card or something that says, states that they are a U.S. citizen. We bought whistles for people on our staff. We've got the red cards available for them. We've continuously sent out resources, whether it's just the basic know your rights or it's resources on how to talk to your kids about what's happening right now, because so many of our colleagues are parents. How do you even have that conversation of what's happening right now? I mean, why are we having to have those conversations when kids should just be worrying about being kids? But that's just the unfortunate reality that we have right now.
Yeah, I don't know how to talk to my kids about it. It's not fair, and I can't imagine having to feel that rush of emotion. Pauline, you belong here, right?
Well, thank you.
No, you do.
And
people need to hear that, right? And so, and like, we see the videos that are happening in Minneapolis, and it's just heartbreaking. You know, it's terrible.
And what I can't help but think, and also what our colleagues can't help but think, is the stories that aren't being told. It's the stories about humanity, because people are afraid to speak out. I mean, if you asked us maybe, I don't know, 2 weeks ago, I mean, the residents that we serve weren't coming to us and saying, we're afraid to go outside, to go to the grocery store, to be able to put food on the table. Now they are.
Yeah.
And now they're saying, we're concerned. We feel unsafe trying to get ourselves from point A to point B. We need help with transportation. We need help with calling schools because we don't feel safe sending our kids to schools. And it's those added things that we've had to pivot to try and meet our residents and participants where they are, because of where they are, and we are trying to do our best to really meet that need, but also continue the work that we do because we've been doing it for as long as we have, and well, we can't stop that work either.
And you know, the disruption that that causes people's, like you're saying, their lives from school to work to everything. When and this is a question that, I mean, I have a genuine curiosity. In Minneapolis, like, if you're going to go somewhere, how present is ICE in the city? Like, you're going to likely see them.
You know? I mean, it just totally depends, because from at least my experience, like, I've seen them out and about in places that I've gone to, but it's been so quick. Like, it's almost like they're in and they're out. And so it can be really quick, or it can be really drawn out depending on the crowd that that comes, if they're aware that ICE is there. And so, but even just like seeing them, it's almost like this pit that drops in your stomach that you're like, oh my, and it makes you pause for a second. And you're like, what am I supposed to do? What happens now? Like, what's going to happen? You don't know. And it's just that unsettling feeling that you have to stay in and day out.
Yeah. We're talking with Pauline Lee here on the Rational Revolution. One of the things that I think is neat is there's a lot of hope though that has come from this. Mm-hmm. You know, there was a video that I want to play the sound bite on the other side of the break of Paul Revere moms going through a neighborhood, blowing the whistles and saying, you know, they're here, get in, lock your doors, all that stuff. So hard to hear, but like, the bravery and the courage that it takes to do those things really is remarkable. And we're going to continue the discussion here on the Rational Revolution right after this on the Civic Media Radio Network. This is a tough subject, Pauline. I'm glad you're here to help us through it.
We're taking it day by day over here.
Well, so I was talking on the other side about the courage of people, and to see, you know, I think one of the most difficult things of this whole ordeal is how humanity is stripped away from people. But it's so cool to see where people are fighting for those. And I do have a sound bite to play, and it was I watched this clip, and it was I was snuggling with my son, he's 8, and this came up on the reel, and it both like broke me and inspired me at the same time. I don't know if Connor can play that. And so what you're hearing is, it's like in the middle of the night in Minneapolis, and there's people with whistles going through the streets saying, stay inside, they're here, close your doors, all that stuff. You know, trying to keep people safe, and like, there's the instances of that. It's cool to see resistance to this, and trying to help people through really, really hard times. Yeah. And I think it's cool, the organization that you work for, Project for Pride and Living, what are you guys doing?
Yeah. So a little bit about our organization. We're a nonprofit here in the Twin Cities. We've been around for more than 50 years, and we're most known for affordable housing, but we also do career readiness services. And on top of that, we also run 2 alternative high schools, which is a lot.
Oh, wow.
I understand that I'm explaining to you that it's a lot.
I didn't know you had high schools too. Holy cow.
Yeah, I think over time our organization realized that, you know, putting a roof over someone's head isn't enough, because what happens when they can't afford that And then how can you afford that if you don't have the education? So it's all about meeting people where they are and taking care of the whole person. And for so long, that work, what we like to say is we help create places for people to live and pathways for them to thrive. And that work doesn't know race, ethnicity, or gender. And yet in this very moment, that work that we do, the communities we serve, the participants, the residents, they are being directly impacted by those factors out of fear and uncertainty. It's almost like uncharted waters that we're dealing with right now. But going back to that resilience part, I mean, we see resilience in our staff because one, our staff very much reflects the communities that we serve. More than 60% of our staff are people of color.
Oh, cool.
And so they're still choosing to do the work to help the people we serve, whether that be immigrants, refugees, it's anyone. And we're providing those resources to ultimately try and break that cycle of poverty and to build strong communities. And so we are continuing that work, but then we're also seeing resilience, especially among our young people. And so we have had youth who have said, you know what, I will take public transportation so that those who may need it more can take the safer route home. We've had youth who have stood up for their coworkers and businesses and protected them in times of need. Mm. We have had our staff who have so eloquently and so seamlessly switched to provide virtual services for people so that they don't miss a beat, so that they can continue with whether it's their schoolwork or course career training and do it at their own pace, all while dealing with all of the noise that is happening around them and outside of them. And so you talk about those stories of resilience. I mean, that's really what has kept us going and us being able to do our work, because we know people need it and we know people value these resources, and we know what we do ultimately helps build strong communities for the better. It benefits us all.
Right. How do you guys, like, that's a, that is like an all-inclusive thing. We help people, right?
Yeah.
How are the people you help, how are they being impacted and what are they feeling?
Yeah. And it's hard too, because they're directly in it, right? Yeah. And so kind of similar to what I mentioned before, I mean, now we're hearing from residents who are saying, we don't feel safe going out. We need help. We need help with groceries. We need help with transportation to know that we can safely get from point A to point B. With our schoolwork, we don't feel comfortable going outside, but we want to continue with our schoolwork. We know that it's important. We need to get it done. So we want to get it done virtually. And so it's just, it's from all aspects of life that they're being impacted. And it's just, it's so heartbreaking to see, but the resilience again is really what has really motivated all of us to continue doing the work that we do.
What, it's almost beyond like, this is happening here in the United States. You know, it's something that I mean, 20 years ago, 15 years ago, 10 years ago, I wouldn't have thought that we would be talking about something like this. I don't want to ask you what the mood of the community is, but like the people that you know in your crowd, what?
Oh, the mood changes all the time, Mark.
Yeah.
It really does. And I think we're doing our best to find moments where we can smile. And that can be really hard. But you think of the little moments, right? We talk about the resilience. But we also talk about the fact that, you know, I've had so many colleagues stop by my office and be like, how are you? Something simple like that, to know that you are seen and that you are valued and you're cared for. That goes a long way. Like, there are moments where you can smile and you can still see the good in people.
Yeah.
It's just making sure now that you can really, that you really do pay attention to those moments.
How have you been able to, you know, we talked a little bit about this being a TV person and like you weren't allowed to have an opinion. How do you take some time to like allow yourself to feel?
Oh my God. Sometimes I just need to sit with my own feelings. I need to like stop with the social media. I need to stop. I turn off the TV, and sometimes I just need a little bit of silence, to be perfectly honest with you. And I just need to, some time to think. And then other times too, it's almost like I need to be in community. I need to go and and be with people. And I, the other night we were, my fiance and I, we were meeting up with some of my, one of my former colleagues, actually my former photographer at WCCO.
Okay.
And then he and his wife, and we were just like, you know what? I really needed this. Yeah. I needed a moment to laugh and I needed a moment to smile in a safe place. And you can find those moments. They might be a little bit harder to find. And, you know, you have to take a little bit more care and consideration where you go, depending on who you are. But the moments are there. It's just really making sure that you prioritize that when you can, when it's safe to.
How does Project for Pride and Living help with those moments too?
Oh my, we make sure that we do celebrate. When
you just lit up when you're like, ah!
We try. Okay. And it's been so great just to see that. Yes, the work that we do is hard. The daily grind is so hard. I mean, you're talking about helping people achieve the American dream, and that is hard. It's not like going to happen overnight. But when you do, when someone closes on their first home, when they are accepted into one of our new affordable housing properties, when they graduate from one of our schools, man, is that a good feeling. That is a fantastic feeling to know that what you're doing is having a direct impact on people. I used to say, so I was in news for about almost 15 years.
Really?
And for 15 years, for 15 years, I had a front row seat to history, to documenting history.
Yes.
But now I get to play a part in the solution.
Yeah.
Right? And it's so refreshing. Like I love it. Don't get me wrong. I miss my colleagues. I miss being, you know, in the know, but at the same time too, it's finding like this different purpose that you have in life.
Yeah.
No matter when, at what point in life it is, it's finding this different purpose in life to be able to make a tangible difference in the community.
Yeah.
It's really cool.
And that is, yes, it is. And I'm proud of you, and you're doing some awesome stuff. When it comes to, cause good Lord, I mean the history that you had a front row seat for, and then, you know, you get out of the news and it's like, all right, can we be done with this?
Yeah.
And here we are again, you know, and then, and poor Minneapolis. I mean, you know, with everything with the George Floyd and the riots, I have a friend who is, like a freelance guy, and he goes down to the protests every night. And covers it. And he did it for the George Floyd stuff. Like it's just insane what that community has been through over the last handful of years.
And also insane as to how they continue to bounce back.
Yes.
I mean, are we fully back yet? Not necessarily. Not necessarily. But people haven't given up yet. And that is something to remember and something to, you know, just really spotlight is that people haven't given up.
What would you say to people who, you know, might hear that story or read your post and say, well, it's not a big thing. This wasn't an issue 6 months ago. Like it'll pass. What would you say to people like that?
It'll pass, but I encourage you to think about the human impact on people, not just you, but people who may look different from you. It'll pass is one thing, but perhaps it might take longer for us to really come back together. I don't know, as a human race, as a community, to be able to really support each other and to grow from this. That's going to be hard. And what shape that looks like in the future, we're unsure yet, right?
Yeah, I think it'll pass, but we shouldn't be here to begin with. You know, it's sad to see empathy for people and almost lost at times and not able to understand that, you know, there are different struggles than the struggles of someone who looks like me. You know, it's crazy.
Yeah. And I post this and I to this day, I haven't been stopped by ICE.
Yeah.
I haven't. And I haven't gone out a lot either, just because I just don't feel comfortable in doing so. But at the same time too, that doesn't mean that others haven't.
Right.
Right. Put yourself in the shoes of the mom of an immigrant, a legal U.S. citizen who was stopped or who maybe did have a run-in, who had to prove that they were here legally, even though they have been for years. Put yourself in the shoes of a loved one who their loved one was taken by ICE. It's I think we are all better off when we can have a broader sense of what is happening from multiple perspectives and not just think that our own is the correct one, if that makes sense.
Yeah, it does. I as we wrap it up here, I appreciate you having the courage to say things that people do need to hear. And I would imagine that's pretty refreshing as a news person, being able to say something like that. But I genuinely appreciate that. And please do stay safe. It was great to see you. And I'm sure everyone here in Wisconsin is going to be like, and happy to see that you're doing amazing things. And thank you so much for your time. And thank you so much for speaking with us today.
Well, thank you for having me on. I appreciate it.
Pauline, you're the best. Hang in there. Appreciate you.
Thanks.
We'll be back on the Rational Revolution right after this.
You're listening to Civic Media. Find the latest news, information, and archives of all your favorite shows on the Civic Media website, civicmedia.us.
Just another word for nothing left to lose. Nothing. I mean nothing, honey, if it ain't free.
I love Pauline Lee. She is amazing, and I appreciate her courage, and she's great. So I thank you so, so much to Pauline Lee. If you wanted to listen to that again, which I don't blame you, if you did, civicmedia.us, download the app, listen to everything, wherever you get your podcasts, all that good stuff. And I hate to pivot, but there's another thing that happened this week, and I'm going to have my producer extraordinaire play a quick clip for us. Take it away.
We know the Capitol leadership team, specifically Yogananda Pittman, had the intelligence, and there was going to be a high propensity for violence that day. And the Capitol itself was the target. We knew the extremist groups were going to be there. And why do I say that? It was your own report from your intelligence section, the IICD, which was run by Pittman, in the January 3rd special events section. It was in it. It was in it. And Mr. Dunn, I believe that you thought that day would be like just any other. In your testimony to the January 6th committee, you said you found out how ugly was going to get on a cell phone. Somebody sent you some information on social media. The point is, you were all unprepared to deal with that day. And that's because your leadership failed to share the intelligence with you. It was their fault, folks. It was their fault. It was not President Trump. And we are going to expose it for the first time because the Benny Thompson, the sham committee didn't do it.
Will the gentleman yield for
the
question?
The sham committee didn't do it. The report is 845 pages. Donald Trump.
We got to talk about something that's bigger than January 6th, I think. Because January 6th wasn't an accident. January 6th was a symptom. You know, once again, we're being told that it is not responsible for the violent mob that he sent to the Capitol because the Capitol police were, quote, unprepared. Unprepared. That argument insults your intelligence because it asks you to deny something that you see with your own eyes. Let's strip this down, okay? Trump summoned the crowd. He lied to them. He told them that their country was being stolen. He pointed at the Capitol and said, "You need to fight like hell." The police didn't create that mob. They didn't radicalize it. They didn't aim it like a weapon or pull the trigger. They were the people that were standing in front of the Capitol when the mob arrived. And so when someone says, like that idiot congressman from Texas, "Oh, well, the police should have been prepared here for what? What should they have been prepared for? Prepared for the violent mob that Trump incited? It was that guy's fault." Because, hey, if that's true, if everyone knew this crowd was dangerous, then Trump's responsibility doesn't disappear. It becomes undeniable blaming the police instead of Donald Trump is like blaming firefighters for not stopping an arson fast enough while the arsonist stands behind the building holding the matches. That's not logic. That's propaganda. And this is the part that should really scare you. This whole freaking thing should scare you. But this isn't just about January 6th. It's about Trumpism itself. Over and over and over again, they tell you not to believe what you can see with your own damn eyes. You watched a violent mob storm the Capitol. And they tell you it was, oh, it's just a tour. You watch police officers being beaten, including police officers we've had on this show. We talked to Harry Dunn before. And they tell you that he was overreacting. You just heard it. It's overreacting. You watched a woman murdered in Minneapolis. And they blamed her for it. Same move every time. Reality happens. And then Trumpism says, no, it didn't. It's not what happened. Or worse, they'll say, well, yeah, that happened. But it's the victim's fault. What? This isn't just immoral. It's dangerous. This is a movement that trains people to reject reality and to deny cause and effect. They blame the victims instead of the aggressors. And that can't function in a democracy. It's terrible. Because once you convince people that violence is self-defense, that accountability is somehow persecution, when you believe that, and facts are like opinions, if you believe those things, then anything is justifiable. Look at this week, ICE is talking about they're going into people's homes without a warrant. What? Anything is justifiable. January 6th wasn't the end of the logic. That was their proof of concept. It works. And here's the hard part that nobody wants to hear. 50 years ago, or 50 years from now, no one's going to admit that they supported any of this. Like today, no one says, yep, you know, I was really a segregation guy myself. There's not people out there that admit that they were opposed to civil rights, except for Donald Trump, how he said that the real result of the civil rights movement was that white people were treated really unfairly. No one admits they were just following along. History ends the same way. The photographs are there. The footage is there. All of this is documented. The lies are documented. And suddenly everyone says, oh, I didn't know. It wasn't like that. This wasn't what I thought. We do know. We're here. We see it. We live it. January 6th is not going to be remembered as a security failure. It will be remembered as the moment a sitting president tried to override democracy and then convinced millions of people to pretend it never happened. That's the stain. And that's the most dangerous lie of Trumpism. That is not about elections or police protests. It's this. Don't believe your eyes. Believe us instead. That lie has never ended well. Not once. Don't believe it now. Hey, Pauline Lee, you're the best. Thank you so much for your courage. Thanks for your time today. We'll see you next week on another episode of Rational Revolution on the Civic Media Radio Network. Take care.
The national news cycle never stops, but it can be hard to find news about your local community. Civic Media is dedicated to providing quality local and state news coverage across Wisconsin. With the Civic Media app, you can get notifications about local stories that matter to you and your community. Find the free Civic Media app in your phone's app store and choose notifications from the menu to tell us what kind of news you want to hear about.